Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
I totally thought you'd be like, I'm not a Christian, but I love Jesus. I still think Jesus is super great. And I was like, Jesus is a tool of high control religion. No.
Welcome to Holy Ghosting, a podcast about deconstruction from your middle-aged mom friends. And today we have a very special guest, my sister, known on the internet as DL Mayfield, but known to me as Danielle Mayfield or Danielle Stranigan. Or Squiddy or whatever else your nicknames were as we were children. I was Squirt, she was Squid, our youngest sister was Spud. So I'm the eldest Stranigan sister, and Danielle and I have had many adventures together, and we have sort of deconstructed together in very different ways, but we have, as we've become older, realized that maybe our brains function a little differently, and is probably why we view religion and God and our upbringing a little differently. And we'll get into some of that, but mostly we just want to hear from Danielle today on what it's like being a neurodivergent in evangelicalism. Is that how we say it? A neurodivergent? That sounds like
someone who is neurodivergent, I guess, but it's fine. It's fine.
Whatever. You gotta educate this normie over here. So I could wax poetic about all the incredible things Danielle has done and written, but she will do a better job of that herself. So Danielle, tell us a little bit about who you are and like what are your special interests?
Oh, that's a very good question, Lindsay. Gold star. Yes, I know.
I've been paying attention. Someone reads your Substack.
Okay. Yeah. So Lindsay, it's funny because you just know me so well, but also like sometimes it's hard to get a clear, you know, picture on your sibling or whatever as we grow and change. And I feel like this year I've had so many massive changes and you've just rolled with all of them. So I just want to say that off the go, like Lindsay's really awesome that way. But yeah, I'm a writer. I've been writing in Christian spaces for a long time. I have written multiple books. And I think what I want to talk about today, and the background people need to know about me today for this podcast, is that in the past year, I got diagnosed as autistic. And what ended up happening was I ended up deconverting from Christianity as a result. And I was like one of those all-in Christians. Like, not only was I writing books and articles, but like I got my degree in missions, in teaching literacy to non-literate refugees here in the United States. I lived in low-income housing for almost 15 years. I went the whole Shane Claiborne route. And I, not only was I like immersed in trying to help people, I was also like on the front lines of trying to convince white evangelicals to love their neighbors in the past decade. And so I think like taking a step back in the years we've experienced, and, you know, even before Trump, they were just terrible. They were terrible people to try and convince to think about anyone besides themselves, if I'm being perfectly honest. I think Trump really started to make it much more visible for people. But I've been sort of like panic mode like since 2016, you know, trying to get my people, trying to be like, guys, if you just read Jesus, like we actually would like love people and like society could be upside down. It is so great. And being diagnosed autistic really gave me the tools and clarity to learn how to regulate my nervous system, which then allowed me to see with clarity kind of like the religious indoctrination I had been a part of for my whole life. So sorry, long-winded, lots to unpack there, but that's me. And I'm writing about all this stuff on my Substack called God is My Special Interest. And yeah, if any of this sounds interesting to people, they can follow me there. And I do have a podcast that I do with my husband, Crispin, where we dissect evangelical pop culture of the 80s and 90s called The Prophetic Imagination Station. We are de-influencing Adventures in Odyssey, Frank Peretti, and right now we're talking about DC Talks, Jesus Freak album. And I have a whole episode up with both Lindsay and our younger sister about being martyrs
for God. It's real.
Such a good episode.
Real honestly, lighthearted, like, talking about how we all thought we were going to die.
We make it fun. Okay. But yeah,
it's fun. And it's not only fun, but it's like you all took me back to a time that I clearly remembered in my young, youthful, like girl upbringing. Except it was a time and space that I had forgotten. Like I had never really unpacked what the End Times trilogy had actually done to me.
Yeah.
And when the episode started, I was like, oh, fun for them that they like went that deep, like eye roll. And then by like the middle of the episode, I was like, oh, I was that deep.
Yeah. Shit. I mean, isn't that wild? We always are like, there's people who are deeper than us. So it really didn't impact us that much. And that's actually a strategy of like cults or high control places. They always point to people who are in a more like, you know, visible cults or something like that. And so I don't know. I think that's really fascinating. And really what we have to learn to do is to pay attention to ourselves and how our inner worlds experienced the theology and ethics of evangelicalism. And I think a lot of us are definitely going to find some trauma there if we do that digging.
Yeah. When you got your diagnosis, did you instantly make a connection? Or is it when you started to learn more about yourself and what autism looks like in your life, did you then start to see something change?
Yeah, I think at the beginning, it was like a total like mind reframe for me, because both Lindsay and I grew up in a house where our older brother was diagnosed autistic in the 80s. So this was, you know, back when hardly anybody was getting diagnosed. He ended up passing away in a car accident when we were both small children. And so we knew that autism existed, but he also had like intellectual disabilities and just presented in a really classic, like white male middle-class boy ways. And so really, I think I was just an extremely shy child who didn't like to talk and who was totally enmeshed with my mother and was basically in like the freeze state for most of my life. However, when I talk about my life, I'm like, I was just a really shy kid till I left home. And then I became like intense missionary, then like activist writer person. And honestly, learning I was autistic was like, oh my gosh, now I have to start to learn to pay attention to my body. Because, you know, the hallmarks of autism are, one is that your brain processes information differently than other people. And two, you have a highly sensitive nervous system. And so, you know, you are more sensitive to like sound and taste and texture and all those things, right? And once I started paying attention to my body and saying, you know, I actually am a highly sensitive person. I've just been trying to wish it away my whole life. And once you're middle-aged, right, you're like, oh no, I'm actually not developing a tougher skin, you know, and actually like, I'm just as sensitive as I've always been, except now I'm totally burnt out because I've pushed past my limits for so long. So I had to go back to the basics of like, well, how the heck do you calm a nervous system that has been dysregulated and you've been stuck in fight, flight, freeze, or fawn, you know, your whole life? And so it really started with things like freaking TikTok, man. TikTok didn't diagnose me, but TikTok, I feel like, saved my life, because I started watching some TikToks about like, just put an ice pack on your chest for 10 minutes. Like, and that actually gets blood to rush to the vagus nervous system, right? That can calm you down. I started doing that 10 minutes a day. Like, and then I started doing like things that are more in my body, right? Like going on these walks and connecting to my emotions, like, and it all kind of spiraled out from there. Like when you start to, you know, connect your nervous system and your emotions and your body, it really just does spread out into every area of your life. So I think I just finally got calm enough. And my brain started to quiet a bit. And I think there's just a lot of revelations I had in a really short period of time. But some of them included my childhood was one of religious indoctrination, right? My caregivers did not have unconditional love. And being a Christian was the most important thing to the people in my life. I was very isolated. So I didn't have any outside contact with people that could ever tell me otherwise. And I started to realize that I have not been in a conversation with the Holy Spirit for the past 38 years of my life. But instead, I've been really encouraged to interrogate and ruminate in ways that have, you know, basically I have like really intense religious OCD, and I've had it for a really long time. And so now I'm in the healing phase, right? I'm doing the nervous system work. I'm doing all this stuff for long enough that my brain will be quiet sometimes. And that just makes me want to cry. And I do. I cried last night just thinking like I could have been living life like this the whole time. Like my brain was so busy and sad and full of terror and striving within Christianity. And that was encouraged at all times. I was like the star Christian, y'all. And I was very mentally unwell.
She's not wrong. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Lindsay, I don't know if you want to jump in and say what you want to say.
Well, I mean, I always joke that you were my own personal Holy Spirit. Like you were always the better kid. You were always the one telling me when I was wrong. Like if I would cuss, because as we were discussing off mic earlier, that I am a potty mouth and I always have been. And, you know, I mean, the jokes, she would read, Danielle was always a voracious reader, and she would read these books and then like tell my parents like not to read them because it was like too adult of content, like stuff like that, which I thought was, my parents thought was hilarious. Like she'd be like, oh yeah, this has,
was this
like
Frank Peretti of- because
no, it's Jurassic Park. I read all the Michael Crichton books when I was like 9, and I would be like, Mom, there's like some language, you probably don't want to read that one. Like,
oh, 9-year-old telling her mom,
not even the
like,
gore. She's yeah, like censoring it with a Sharpie.
No, gore wasn't a problem in our family for some reason.
Nobody
sex
cares
for
about
sure.
Gore. Yes,
if there was sex,
bad.
Right out.
Sex
but gore,
and
we
swears.
Sex yeah, and swears.
Sex and swears. But like, man, people chopping each other up in the Last of the Mohicans. That was great. My parents were all about it. But yeah, it's, I mean, it's interesting. Like when Danielle first got diagnosed, I had a hard time wrapping my brain around it because we do have autism in our family, and I know what it like looks like in a certain way. And so it just, you know, again, when I've known someone my whole life and how they are, I'm like, yeah, I don't know. You're like weird, but you're my, like, we're all weird in our own ways.
Yeah.
But it's been interesting. We have talked a lot about this, just how differently we've sort of landed and our feelings on. And I think a lot of it is because I just didn't buy in as much as Danielle did. And it sucks. Like it's only now that I'm realizing like how damaging all that was. And like, I look at our caregivers and I just didn't feel, I mean, I performed in ways, I mean, I did lots of things to get love and acceptance, but mine was much more, I think I just wasn't expected to be a spiritual because I wasn't. So for me, it was like, I had to get straight A's and I was on student council, and mine was much more like, I was expected to go be some awesome business. You know, my family, I was like, Lindsay's going to be a lawyer. Like that was sort of what my expectation was, but yeah, it was very different. Like Danielle was the hope, like to be a missionary and to change the world for God.
Yeah. I think that's fascinating because my mom really did, you know, homeschooled me, basically was like, she told me she always wanted to be a missionary, but since she married my dad, she couldn't. So she was like, so you'll be a missionary. So I never applied to
colleges. Was that family business idea? Like you guys were like, who's going to take over the ministry? Was that you, Danielle?
I mean, no, it was mostly my mom. And so looking back right now that I'm able to sort of step outside and develop some boundaries, it's just like, yeah, I think it's pretty classic, some toxic family stuff in there with emotionally immature parents. And honestly, there's a huge overlap between people who've experienced trauma and, you know, don't develop emotional maturity we would expect of an adult. And those types of people are really drawn to high control religions like evangelicalism. Yeah. So my parents both had pretty hard upbringings in different ways. And they, you know, are kind of baptized into the Jesus movement of the 1970s. Mm-hmm. They have kids, get married young. And like Dr. Dobson's like, listen, you just spank the shit out of your kids and make sure you break their spirits. Like, and everything will work out. Like your kids will not be traumatized. Like they will be great, fully formed adults. And all of these things about evangelicalism, all the media, all the sermons, all the ways people interpret the Bible, like it is based around some really toxic ways of interacting with people and viewing yourself as the center of the universe. So there's this idea of supremacy, Christian supremacy, and totalism that is the bread and butter of evangelicalism. And it attracts people who are like, yes, I do hear from God. And yes, everyone should believe just like me or else they will burn for all eternity. And therefore, I don't actually have to think about their needs, concerns, or wants in a civic society if they're not a part of my team. And so, you know, there's all that going on. And then there's some other just other stuff going on with my mom's mental health. And it's a pretty classic thing, right? In these emotionally unhealthy families, you have the perfect child, you have the scapegoat. And then there's people like Lindsay who are just like, well, I'm on my own and I'm piecing out.
Overachiever. And so, here I
and
go.
The avoidant overachiever, yep. And the person who leaves home as early as they can, which is definitely Lindsay. Yeah, and so
I see you, Lindsay, out of there.
I don't know if you guys grew up with families that are as into it, but I am curious if people listening, if they sense like, yeah, my parents were so all in on this religion. And growing up, I had this sense like if I didn't buy in, right, you're kind of punished. Like the love is conditional. It's so important to your caregiver. And so, of course, when they're like, do you want to commit for life to not only be a Christian, but to make sure other people become Christians too at 6 years old, or else you'll not only will you be in hell, but like everybody you know be in hell if you don't tell them. I'm autistic. I'm taking it literally. My mom says she's hearing from God every day. I'm like, okay, then. Yes, yeah. Sign me up.
The adults
for
were
a life
not
of
lying.
This.
That's what I thought, right? Like, the adults were the ones who were like, hey, look, we went through this whole thing. We figured it out. There's this Bible. It tells you all the rules. I was like, awesome. Great. I'm eating it up. I'm like, check.
We had to.
But then I watched my brother do something bad and I'd be like, oh, yeah, no, that is not okay. And I would be like, make a note. Also, this is not okay. Because your brother got in trouble for it. Yeah. And now I realize like they did not have their shit together. They were my age. I often think about like when Rodney King happened, the rhetoric I heard was he disobeyed police orders. Mm-hmm. They're protecting us in our community. Police are our best friends. That is fucked up. Okay. That's what you are going to see. And that's what you're going to explain to your kid. And that's the worldview that you're going to perpetuate in them. I don't know. Like, I wasn't a fan of that attitude.
It's really interesting to think about, like, yeah, our parents did latch on to this full worldview that they were like, and there can never be any cracks in it. You can never interrogate it. You can never, you know, kind of back down from it. And I'm like, I am now 38. I have a 12-year-old and a 7-year-old. Like, I tell them when I don't understand something. I apologize when I make a mistake. I listen to them. If they tell me they're experiencing the world in a certain way and have questions and concerns, I listen to them. And so I think my deconversion has been a long time coming because parenting my kids has been a perpetual slap in the face reminding me of how I was raised so differently. And that's a grief I don't really know how to unpack. And I think me being autistic and just the things my mom, like she truly was probably in a period of psychosis for several years, looking back on our life, just because she truly thought the end of the world was happening. She would tell me about that every morning, would read the book of Revelation every day, was spending hours talking to God. And I was the person she told about all of it because I was like her best friend. Again, I was 8, 9, 10, 11, all this stuff. She heard God tell her that she was going to die when I was 11. And she told me, but I wasn't allowed to tell my dad or my sisters. And so that whole year she'd have these like secret conferences with me about how God was keeping, you know, all this stuff. So Lindsay did not get any of this stuff. And I think that's an interesting thread to my story is that, yes, I have written books. I have been a person on the internet. I have a podcast, but like, I think when I got my autism diagnosis and I started looking at like what is actually in the categories of the DSM-5, there's two components to like what makes it a disability or mental illness or whatever. And one of them is right, like you have these restricted and repetitive interests or behaviors. And I was like, okay, obviously God is my special interest. I've been obsessed with this my whole life, you know? But then the second component is like social and emotional deficits in communication and in relationship and being like naive and vulnerable to exploitation. And I was like, that is so not me. Like I am like such a tough cookie. I'm a lone wolf. I know my own brain. And then the more I thought about it, I was like, damn, I think I was a true believer who took it all literally and seriously. And I think I've been exploited by people within evangelicalism my entire life. It started with my parents, then it was YWAM, then it was Bible college, then it was, you know, these mission orders among the poor, then it was progressive Christianity. I've been exploited by all of them, if I'm being honest, because I was a true believer and because I was autistic. And so that's been a hard pill to swallow. Nobody wants to think of themselves as being exploitable. And yet all of us have the capacity for that, especially the more you believe in something, the more you want it to be good news for everyone, which was my core driving focus in Christianity. Like, damn, like you are just ripe for exploitation. And again, if we're talking about emotionally immature people are drawn to evangelicalism, I'm like, to me, when I think about pastors, missionaries, like writers, I'm like, it seems to be a good mix of true believers and narcissists, if I'm being perfectly honest. And those are the people that thrive in high control religion. Everybody's always been nervous of me because if I find out something, then I share that information. I think there is a sense of unease with people like me within these groups. It's like, when are you going to go too far? So like I used to write for Christianity Today. I would write cover stories for them. They flew me out to their home offices to kind of like show me around and, you know, all this stuff. And 2 weeks after I got back from that trip, I on Twitter said something about, I agree with Sarah Bessie, who wrote this post about being affirming of same-sex marriage. And they called me on the phone and they're like, you're no longer allowed to write for us in any capacity. And I was like, why? And they're like, well, we saw that you retweeted Sarah Bessie's
tweet.
And I was like, so? And they're like, so obviously you don't affirm the sanctity of scripture. I was like, I do. Like, let's have this conversation right now. And I was like on my back deck, like yelling about how much I love the Bible. And they just kept saying over and over again, like, no, it's clear you don't. And I was like, well, where is this written down in your policy? And they're like, it's a verbal policy. I was like, well, you never told me, you know, all this stuff.
Isn't that convenient that it's not written down?
Convenient. Thank you. Again, autistic me is just like, I knew that that's like one of the hot button issues. And so I was like, well, I won't write about that for your magazine, but like, I'm writing about these other important things. I can't believe you just told me how valuable I was to you. And I did this one thing. And now you're telling me I don't respect the Bible. And I was just freaking out.
Being a Christian at any church ever, anywhere. That is worst.
We told you Christians started cancel culture. So it's like
cancel culture. Yeah.
No, looking back now, there are like certain things that make a lot of sense. Like Danielle, you had a cover story for Christianity Today, right? About like drinking alcohol.
Oh my gosh. So
she wrote this story about how she doesn't drink alcohol.
I went through a big anti-alcohol phase. Okay.
Because of what, like what purpose, well, what Christian reason?
Well, you could read my article. No, just kidding.
oh, geez. Okay. Plug to Christianity Today here.
Read it. Do not read it. But basically, here's the real story. They, on some writer's forum, Caitlin Beatty, who was then the managing editor of Christianity Today, was like, I'm looking for someone who would want to write a story about them choosing to not drink alcohol. And I was like, well, I don't drink alcohol. And so that was my first cover story for them. That was my in into CT. Looking back, right, they're just looking for a voice that promotes their magazine, says what they want to say. And that is what pitching is. You write to the audience. And so I know some of that stuff, but I was living in low-income housing at the time. And so many of my neighbors were in just the throes of addiction issues. And I think it was really triggering to me to see how like kids in those families where parents consumed a lot of alcohol, drugs, all these other things. I was very triggered by that. And so I was just like, I would rather not drink. And
well, and you were doing everything at that point to be super respectful, like the way you dressed, like you, because you were working with a ton of Muslim revenue. So I think also like those cultures, they don't drink. Like,
yeah, they don't drink. And also like social media, the way it views like, that was in the height of the wine mommy phase. And I'm just like, you guys, kids need to be safe. Like, I feel a little weird around glamorizing numbing. I think I've shifted a little bit when it comes to that. But like, I don't know if I've posted a picture of
This is why it's hilarious, because she, ever since that article, if we have a drink, because I've talked about this on the podcast. I'm the person in our family that like comes home and opens a bottle of wine and we're like, hey. And so Danielle's always like, okay, but don't post about it on social media. I'm like, whatever. You like a good gin and tonic sometimes.
I do. And should
Danielle, you know, I introduced or I got Meg on the weeds. Like I'm the bringer of the party.
She's like, the libations queen. I'm like, the libations.
gives without asking to receive.
I was saying you're the libations goddess, but I forgot I muted myself because I was eating a haiju.
Bring it for the whole class, okay? We want to hear your smacking on a haichu.
All the grape ones?
No, I don't want a grape haichu.
I love
you.
The grape flavor.
All right, save them for Danielle.
I'm going to send them all to you.
My favorite.
Address later.
Okay, so I think, what should this be, like the DL Mayfield exclusive where I say that I love marijuana?
Yes. What? Yes. Tell us all about it.
Mom friends, please.
How did you deconvert? From
we
that.
Did an entire episode on drugs and how much we love them.
Phil, that
I've never talked about it. I've never posted about it. And I've had similar like autistic feelings. I used to be like, I'll never try marijuana until every wrongfully incarcerated person is set free from prison, which honestly is admirable. Like, I love that about myself. And when you look at the history of how marijuana has been used by cultures who have been oppressed, how they've used it to regulate their nervous systems, and then the United States criminalized that, like, has led to mass incarceration of Black people. Like, this is the hard part about being autistic, right? I'm just like, this is so fucked up to be a white lady who gets to buy like 100 milligrams of THC for $6 that I spread out over 6 weeks and it helps me calm down. Like, I feel really weird about just joking about that because of this history with how this tool has been criminalized in the United States. So this is a picture into what it's like to be me. And I'm just like processing this in real time. It's great for me. Great for nervous system regulation. It's 100% connected to me being able to be in touch with my body as well.
Conflicted vibes only.
Conflicted vibes only, y'all. Like, here we go.
That's like, your way. I will say, I mean, I've seen Meg react. Like, we went into a really like, we've been into some fancy weed stores together, my friend.
Bougie weed stores. Oh no.
Yeah. So bougie.
You went too. Wait, in Palm Springs. Right.
I know. I was struggling in there.
That place was, yeah.
Let me tell you.
I think the first time Meg and I ever went to a weed store together, we walked out and she was just like, expunge all the record. Like, she looked like, and I'm so terrible. I mean, this is why I know our brains are different, because it does not. I mean, I do care about those things. And I like think that I agree with everything you said, Danielle. But when I am in there buying my edibles, that is not.
I know. But I cannot believe that white people are now profiting off of it while there's still people in prison. Like, it is. And again, when we think about people using it to relax in mm-hmm. a really oppressive system and having that be criminalized, it's just like, oh, my gosh.
I imagine the idea of like me on my back patio. I got a bong for the first time in December, and I never had smoked a bong before that. And so I just imagine if like the police came in aggressively, because you know they're not going to be friendly about it, and just that, like that sacred space where you just kind of get to center yourself and be, I talk about it as like, I'm the most present with the people that I'm with in the moment that I'm in. And I get to experience it without the millions of other things bombarding me in my brain. And to then have that destroyed by this horrifying, like racist squad of people, it's so fucking frustrating. And it's frustrating that we're still like talking about fixing this still. Like,
yeah, I mean,
that's annoying.
It's totally the new Jim Crow. And so I think that's, again, a part of even my deconversion, right, from Christianity is also this. And this has been going on for me for forever. Like, my first book was called Assimilate or Go Home, Notes from a Failed Missionary on Rediscovering Faith. And it was about me realizing like my good news is only good news for people just like me. Like, mm-hmm. and that goes with Christianity and my view of what it means to be an American, right? The American dream. It's only available to people like me. And so for me, like, Christian supremacy is so tied to Christian nationalism, which is finally, you know, in the conversation around here, but it's like, Yeah, I think the high control elements of evangelicalism, right, lead to authoritarianism, which leads to, like, yes, these measures that the U.S. implements are necessary, needed. You can't really interrogate it that much. And I'm like, well, I've deconstructed all of that. I now, you know, and it's hard. I think it's hard. I don't know where all you are at, but, like, so many systems are failing. So many of them are crumbling. And if you grew up evangelical, you might have this panic that's like, well, I have to fix it then. Like,
yeah,
because we still have these vestiges of, like, God wants us to change the world. God wants us to save the world. God wants us to fix things. God has specifically given us insight into history and how humans are, and, like, work, work, work. And Jesus was perfect. Jesus literally did everything perfect. Like, you should try to be like that. And I'm just like, oh, damn. Like, maybe we are just living in a crumbling world and we can just try and survive it. You know, that's where I'm at now.
I feel like maybe, you know, Jesus died in his 30s. So look, we're still here. And maybe we're done. Like, maybe we're done living by Jesus as an example, because I didn't get martyred. You didn't get martyred. Like, it didn't happen. So now we get to just try maybe living our life without his influence as, like, the one guiding, shining bright light.
Yeah, people get real mad when I say I have deconstructed Jesus too. Because I think, and this is actually something my husband Kristen told me. He's like, he was shocked when a few months ago, I was like, I'm not a Christian anymore. It feels great. He was like, I totally thought you'd be like, I'm not a Christian, but I love Jesus. I still think Jesus is super great. And I was like, Jesus is a tool of high control religion. No, like, the Jesus I was introduced to kept me in high control religion, kept me hating myself.
Yeah.
There's always something to live up to. Like, the care on the stick that made me just never match up. Yeah. Jesus could heal people. I put myself in low-income housing with refugees. Like, these people need some fucking miracles in their lives. Okay.
Yeah.
And I surrounded myself with them. I prayed. I tried to show up, and I couldn't fix it.
Yeah.
And I did not see God intervening. And yet I had a mom. I went to colleges where they were like, no, God does intervene in humanity. Like, when you speak in tongues, and he'll heal people who go to Bible college, if their leg is, like, slightly shorter than the other leg, like, God totally intervenes in the world. And if you're not speaking in tongues, or if you're not experiencing healings, or if you're not seeing people come to Christ, then obviously the problem's with you. Mm. And so this interventionist God, who only seemed to intervene, you know, very sporadically, and for other Christians, for very minor things, you know, like, I had to wrestle with that as I'm living in these traumatized spaces, you know, as I'm being surrounded by trauma over and over and over again. So I'm like, when I say I deconstruct Jesus, that's what I mean. I deconstruct the idea of an interventionist God, because that God's pretty monstrous. If God is showing up at Asbury and not in Turkey and Syria, where millions of people are dying, like, that is an ethical monstrosity.
Yeah,
and now that we live in, like, now we live in, like, a pluralistic society with access to social media. And so I think people who commit to this idea of that kind of interventionist God have to do so much work to convince themselves that other people deserve their suffering,
yeah,
that they don't even know what they're turning into. And I just want to say, like, let's pump the brakes. Let's look at the logical conclusions of your interventionist God. Sorry, I'm sorry. I'm getting too intense.
Excited to do the part where I'm like, and also, that's the whole thing about the Republican Party and the Christian right as well, because what you're talking about is exactly what they do on a macro level for the entire nation. This is full on white supremacy, dominionism, the papal bull, the doctrine of discovery, like, all of that shit is tied to this exact same thing, this isolation and repression systematically of people who are brought into the religion, either because they converted for some reason, like they might have had an addiction and they found a way through it and out of it by having this community or whatever it is, or if more in our situations that they have children and they bring them into this place, like, that is not different than how people reproduce politically as well. And when we have ourselves aligned with, like, the Christian nationalism, white supremacist, like, corners of this country, we really are playing with some fire, like hellfire. If you ask me, if I believed in Christian hell, this would be it. And those would be the people that go there. But that's not what we're seeing. But what we see is more Christians being militant and more Christians claiming that their own persecution complex and turning this idea of what is reality? Is it malleable? We can make it whatever we want, apparently, kind of situation into our political and day-to-day reality, which is also like way terrible. Why did I say that?
Ugh. I love it. I was vibing with you. And you know, the overlap here is authoritarianism.
Yes.
So high control religions, right, prime you for authoritarianism, and not only to go with authoritarianism, but to crave it, to clamor for it, to be excited for it. And, you know, the Republican Party has put all their chips in, right, with, yes, well, we will be that for you. And I just think, like, I think the studies have shown, like, 30 to 40% of a population, right, is highly susceptible to high control situations that create people primed for authoritarianism. And that's all you need, right, to take control of a country. We see this in Nazi Germany. And I don't think that's an overused analogy, because it was good white Christians, right, who loved authoritarianism that went with the Nazi party. And like, that's literally what's happening here. And I think for me and Lindsay, we have a lot of grief to unpack. And we kind of have our own journeys with this, with realizing like our parents see nothing wrong with that.
Right.
And I don't know, Lindsay, if that's too intense or too deep for you. if you want to talk about if you've processed that at all, if you've thought about what the implications are, with the end goal being us being Republicans who love authoritarianism. I mean, that's what our parents hoped for us. They gave up on you sooner, but that doesn't mean they don't still want you to be like that, right?
I mean, they know I'm not going to be a Republican. That is
that ship sailed. Do they actually know that?
Oh, 100%. I mean, I even used to like get on Danielle's case because homegirl used to vote for Jesus.
And oh, was it right? Long time ago, I wrote in Jesus for president.
She did. And I was like, dude, how is that helping anybody? I was
not about it.
That was in your Shane Claiborne days. It was her Shane Claiborne.
My Shane Claiborne. It's Obama's first time. I did vote for him the second time. Okay. I got off my stupid high horse. Okay.
I'm going to have to deep dive into Shane Claiborne because I don't know this.
Neither do I. Reference. I'm sorry. No, he's like a hippie, progressive Christian, barefoot, burlap, lives with the poor.
That's exactly what I assumed he was. But yeah, cool. That's fun.
He's supposed to be this paragon of like progressive Christianity, and he's like pretty excited about the Asbury revival. And I was just like, no, thank you. Also, he's never been openly supportive of queer people. So I'm just like, y'all, it's just a lot.
My theory of the left wing and the right wing are really just one big circle, and they always touch tips. There's just that one, those like two fringe sides that you're like, oh, I'm anti-vax, and this person's like, ooh, me too. And then this person's like, oh, I only sew my own clothes from burlap. And this person's like, oh, hell yeah. And then permaculture, and then make our own essential oils. And then you have yourselves the perfect business plan that hits across the aisle. It's an MLM, and I'd like to sell you shares in it tonight on the ground.
We can get in.
True. I'm in. Yeah, go to Holy Ghosting. / Damn it, I messed it up. Go to patreon.com/holyghosting and sign up
to get in on our MLM where we sell. What are we selling? Essential oils?
Probably.
I don't know. Yeah, something like, about the tips. So, I don't.
Oil goyles.
That's oil goyles.
Yes.
Christian-ish oil goyles.
When I clean my hair out of the shower, I'm sure we could fashion that into something useful for someone.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, I've got a lot of hair for you then. That is like perfect. Constant when I take a shower.
We're solving two problems at once. One problem no one had and a problem everyone had. We'll see what happens.
Danielle, what are some things that you're doing now that have helped you to shift? Are you still doing spiritual practices, and how has that shifted or changed for you?
That's a really good question, because the answer is no. The answer is like, I went from this being literally what I woke up thinking about, thought about all day long. I obviously had you know, religious scrupulosity and ethical perfectionism. And so for me, God got turned into like this, yeah, this progressive Christian ethic of like, am I making the most ethical decision at all times, like to love my neighbor? And that impacted where I lived, where I sent my kids to school, like what I allowed myself to think, what I allowed myself to watch, what I allowed myself to do for myself. And I think for me, I've just needed the quiet. And so, yeah, I don't do any spiritual practices. I am really focusing on listening to my body because my brain doesn't always tell the truth, but the body never lies. Like your body never lies to you, and your body will tell you what it needs to heal. And what's really unfortunate is so many of us don't want to listen to our bodies, because if we did, we would have to change so much about our lives.
Yeah.
And people feel stuck. And if you feel like that, if you're like, well, I can't listen to my body, I can't listen to my grief, I can't listen to my anger, I can't listen to my rage, I just want to say that it's going to be okay. Like you will survive this, and you will figure out that you can be there for yourself. God's not coming to fix it. Okay. Like God's not coming. I mean, that might sound really sad to people, but you know what's sadder is to live your life doing everything right and expecting God to keep coming and making things better. And it doesn't. And I think even for myself, being surrounded by Christians who were really deeply unhealthy people and who were mentally unwell and who were traumatizing other people, doing all sorts of shit and then defending all sorts of other shit, you know, just and just being convinced that they were right because they bought into this ideology. It's like, I don't want to be like that. I don't want to be that kind of person. And so I've stopped all of them. And I'm actually really enjoying that. I think in the beginning, I kept saying like, I'm sure I'll come back to it because I'm a really spiritual person. I've been really spiritual my whole life. And now I am just realizing like how much religious trauma I have. Me and my husband just went to Disneyland for like 2 days. And it was like earth shattering to be like, we can just go and have fun and not think about things and come home. And when I got home, I remember going to bed and being like, I feel this compulsion to say, thank you, God. That was such a great trip. And I was like, God didn't do shit. Like, my husband worked really hard to get the money so we could afford this. I worked really hard to find a babysitter that my kids actually feel safe with. Like I worked, you know, and I just reminded me like anything positive that happened in my life up until this last year was God. Anything negative was me. And if you live like that long enough, like what do you think's going to happen to your mental health? Like, of course I hate myself and I have so much work to do to learn to just be a human. Yeah. And I think that other people's spiritual experiences are totally valid. And I think I'm just okay with saying like, but I don't think I experience it like that. And so for me, like, that's where I'm at. I do feel so anxious talking about this right now because I don't want to like negate anybody's spiritual experiences they've had. And I just don't want to do that. And so I really hope people can hear me and say like, I'm deconverting from religious indoctrination. And I think if you grew up in evangelicalism, you probably have to do some of that work.
Yeah.
And it might mean you need to take a break from spirituality because if you grew up evangelical in the 80s and 90s, like that was the boon of religious propaganda for children. And our parents went all in on it. Like Dr. Dobson is one of the most harmful psychologists to ever. I don't think we have even scratched the surface. No. And he knew what he was fucking doing. He knows attachment science. Like he knows what it does to a kid when you break their spirit. And that's what he wrote his books about. Dare to Discipline and The Strong-Willed Child were about making your child so terrified that they conformed to you and lost themselves. And the whole point was to teach kids to be disconnected from themselves and their bodies so that they would go along with the party line. I'm sorry. That is really intense shit.
Yeah.
It's literally
and of course
true.
It didn't stick on everybody, but it is true. And it impacts neurodivergent people more than others. Like we are more easily exploited in that capacity. And it's wrong. But again, like Lindsay, I'm sure everybody here on this call has a different experience, but we all have been indoctrinated, right?
Yeah.
Against our wills 100%. And have to deal with that the rest of our lives.
And yeah. I think that like what we always try to bring it back to is knowing that like, I mean, Meg and Sarai and I are all in very different places and we all have to like, and we have a lot of love and respect for one another. And so I think that like, it's just important to remember like, it's okay where you're at right now. If you're asking those questions, if you've found yourself on the other side of it. I really love like going back to our conversation with Derek Webb. I really love that his whole thing is like, I'm not a fan of certainty. Mm-hmm. Like his whole thing is like, you can't be certain about anything. And he's like, you know, he's like, yeah, there's things that I believe, but it just having to be all in on something is, yeah, I'm not a fan of that at this point in my life. And it's funny because Danielle, you are speaking with some certain, like when you were like, God is not coming. It's like one of those things where I would remind people that like, that is where Danielle is at. Yes. And if that uh-huh. doesn't resonate with you, that's also okay. And like, and I think that one of the things I've noticed with you is that people, there's a lot of expectation for you to come back. And I think that's the thing is that like, people can do it the damn well, please. And I think that like, sometimes maybe leaving and coming back makes it more healthy for you and makes you have a different view of religion. But a lot of people just leave and never come back. And I think because of specifically how we were raised, like the type of religion we were raised in, like it makes sense to me that a lot of people don't come back. And sometimes I don't even, like I joke with these ladies, I'm like, I don't even know why. Like, I think it's literally just because I found a church community that I believe in and a priest who is like doing incredible work and basically a community who's like, here, okay, great. You have ideas of how to give hygiene supplies to houseless people. You do that. And I'm like, okay. You know, like it's more about like the good people. Sarai, I see that hand. Did you have
Thank you. Yes, I have a confession. No, I just, along these lines, I think one of the most important things to me, and this has been true since I started my own exodus back in 2004, when I was like naming it and really understanding what was happening. The truth is there are a million billion different ways to kind of quote Holy Ghost your religion or other damaging things or like in doctrines or beliefs or vows or whatever that you've made. So many different ways to go through them, in them, without them. And I think the most exciting path is the path that you get to build for yourself as you take your own steps away from this is a wall of lies that people have told me, sorry to speak so certainly, but I could speak kinder. It's a wall of mythology that has helped me have one view of reality that I was given from my birth. And now as I'm growing and these stories no longer serve the truth of my life or the truth of what I observe in the universe, what new mythologies or no mythologies or my own home woven socks that I spun from a sheep that I have on my property and I've got that goodwill and I made my own knitting needles, whatever it is, like who fucking cares? You can do anything you want to, but the most important part of it is you. The most important part of it is what do I need for my own healing? How do I make sense of this experience I've had growing up in this literally abusive religion that does damage you, that does leave you, especially as fucking women and people who are gender nonconforming and people who are not fucking white, all get worse treatment than any of us. But we were girls, so we had it worse than the boys at least. But the truth of like trying to control and repress people into these little neat boxes is never going to be good for us. And so when we're leaving those little boxes, it's hard to make sense of what the next container is going to be. And I think it's just, What container do I want to move into today? Maybe my container is, I don't know. And I don't need to know. Like it's an open choice for everybody.
My marketing mind is very, because I'm like, the season is on taboos. And Sarai, you just did a very good job of talking about like, literally we are talking to people who don't fit into the narrow confines of evangelicalism, which is why we're talking to Danielle about neurodivergence and how, and we know that your experience is not an outlier. Like this, many, many, many people were harmed in evangelicalism. And I can't imagine any person with a neurodivergent brain thriving in that. You know, you may think that you are, but yeah, the buying in is, and it makes me sad. I hate that we had different, like I
something that I'm having to reckon with. I joke a lot about my skepticism and how I like got the F out as soon as I could, you know, and made my own choice. You know, I was like getting the heck out to Southern California to go work in music as soon as I could. And of course, did I like, I feel like I swapped one thing for another for a little while. Like I was also, you know, not, it was like, I look back on that time and I'm like, oh, I worked like for an indie record label that, and I was the only female employee. And like, I gave my whole, I went into debt working for them. Like, oh, it was like, gosh. Oh, I just kind of, they pay you in cool points. Yeah. Turns out when you work for a record label, and they also do things like tell you that even though there's an office that opened up that you could move into, that they like having you sit up front because you have a welcoming presence.
Oh,
like,
no, they mean boobs.
Yeah. Mean boobs. I was the only person there.
And you've always had really good boobs. I mean, so I get where they're coming from with that.
But I got so mad, but this is my personality though. I got so mad when they told me that I just grabbed my stuff and I moved into an office without anyone's permission. Yeah, I was over. I was like, yeah, I'm done. I'm not doing that. So
I think we have all these funny stories from our childhood of things like Lindsay getting prophesied over, being told she was a doubting Thomas. And it's because Lindsay, just personality, neurotype, all of that, is Lindsay has a lot of a sense of autonomy. So you have retained a sense of autonomy, which is like every person should have that. And I think for me as an autistic person, I didn't ever develop that. And that was seen as so helpful, right? To evangelicalism, to have people who don't develop their own autonomy is the goal, right?
Yeah.
And so now that's really the work I have to do, is I do have to, and I get to be in charge. I loved what you said, Soraya, just like whatever comes next, like I'm in charge of it. And that feels great. I will say I'm a little annoyed at some of the discourse around people who talk publicly about deconstructing. And I use the word deconversion just because I don't really resonate with a ton of the deconstruction conversations, but it's sort of like, oh, we look down on people who are too intense, who are like in their angry atheist phase. And I'm just like, let people live. If they form a cult, like let them fucking be angry. Like, let them be weird. And I just think, like, just stop thinking that you should control how another person does anything, including deconstruct.
Yes,
okay?
100%. Like, we're done controlling other
stop
people.
Doing that. Like, stop that.
Also, can we now understand why, like, the myth of like the angry Black woman, right? Like you see where, like you have every right to be angry.
Exactly.
Yet people are, you know, it's like, yeah, I think that there's a lot of times in our culture where we're like, ooh, can you just not be so mad?
You tone it down. And I just
also, no, this shit's fucked up. I will not tone it down.
Yeah. Also coming from the people who believe in righteous anger.
I just, I think it's awesome, Danielle, that you used the word, the phrase angry atheist, because that's always how I thought about it when I was like first, it like 2004, it was still the emerging church moment. You know, it was still like, maybe church can just be cool. But
yes,
I was like,
we can save it with coolness. Yeah.
We tried. It's weird. And no, I think I can't do it now. But I also didn't quite know how to walk away from it. All I knew was I couldn't not believe in something godish, God light, godness, not the way that I knew God. And I also didn't want to become, quote, a bitter, angry atheist.
Yeah.
Because those were the two options. Like, you stay a Christian or you are an angry atheist. There's no other thing in between, which is like classic Christian binary. But that, I mean, that is the magic, is like between those two extremes, there's infinite choices that people can make. Like, let's just think fractally for 1 second. This, you could do anything that's not these two extremes anywhere you want to, or you could pick one of the extremes, whatever, who cares? You get to pick it. But just, I don't know. Why don't we stop being assholes? Care about people. Shit like that. That's my idea.
Anyone else second that?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know. Wait. I want to be a little bit of an asshole. And I think that's like, I need to like work on that.
Yes. You know what, Danielle? I love that for you.
Integration.
Okay. Yeah, we're and here I, for it.
Well, I do want to also say, like, as I've been conceptualizing this, because I do trigger people a lot. And on social media, I'm very honest and blah, blah, blah.
I mean, you're a classic Enneagram one.
Yes.
And this Enneagram 3 is like, oh no, I have to be much more likable. Like, people need to fucking adore me.
Well, so. I thought that people would like to see things clearly, like from an ethical standpoint. But no, people don't actually want to do that. So I think for me, how I'm conceptualizing it these days is like, I don't have a problem with individual Christians and individual spirituality. And it is not my place to judge, but I am talking about the systems. Okay. Yeah. I am talking about the systems, and people get so triggered and then make it personal.
Yep.
And I'm just like, I think it's okay to actually make some broad statements about these systems being really bad, looking at the impact of the theologies. And if it hurts one person, then it's a bad theology. Like one of my favorite scripture verses, which again, I don't read scripture anymore, right? But when Jesus is like talking about kids, he's like, if you cause any of these little kids to suffer, you cause them to stumble. And he's talking to religious people. Like, you should be drowned in the sea. Like, somebody should put a millstone around your neck and throw you in the ocean if you hurt these kids. And I'm here to say I was hurt by growing up as an autistic kid in evangelicalism. Mm-hmm. And you have a multitude of responses you could have to me saying that out loud. And I just want people to sit with their responses. Like, if you have the knee-jerk reaction to defend Christianity or be like, but I'm not like that, or my parents weren't like that, or, well, your parents were really intense and mine weren't that bad. And did it, like, just listen to yourself. Just calm down. Just take a moment and just sit with other people as they share that we don't lie. You guys, our bodies are not lying. And us being honest about the pain we've experienced, like, we're not making this shit up. And so I'll just end on that note. Like, I really don't want to come for individuals and their spirituality, but I'm also tired of when I talk about the systems, people making it so personal.
Yes.
Like, dude.
Yes.
Faith is so deeply personal. Yeah. And I think that like that it's hard for people to divorce that in themselves and not feel like because you've made this choice that then you're ragging on them for not having made the same choice. And that's just, you know, people's own projection. And I think it's just an uncomfortable thing to sit with. And I also just think it's sad, like bringing up that verse, like thinking about what Jesus said versus like what the people who claim to follow Jesus do and the disconnect. I mean, we've talked this podcast is basically about the disconnect between evangelical Christians, like what they do versus like what they supposedly believe. Like the chasm is very wide there, and it never ceases to be infuriating and depressing all at the same time. We do try to have fun on this podcast, but at the end of the day, like, we are talking about heavy shit, right? Like, we try to come at it with a little bit of levity occasionally. Sarai likes to bring, you know, we're in our text thread. The Josh Butler article is what forever going to be. It's the Jesus Jizz article. Like, that will be
generosity and a woman's hospitality for receiving this generous bestowance of semen upon and within her. As the penis of Christ penetrates the church with his spirit and his words. Fucking Josh.
And his jizz.
And his jizz. I'm sorry to anyone who doesn't know what we're talking about. There's an article on the Gospel Coalition this week.
We'd link it, but it's absolute garbage. So instead, you should look for Twitter parodies of it. Oh, what?
So you'll have to wait for the book to come out and the conference that's coming to a church near you.
Wow. We have to start a gossip column that we record right after this, because now I need to know what happened.
You know, I just really need like another heterosexual guy to tell me about, you know, sex and how it relates to God. Like, I'm just craving that.
And what the woman's role is within that system.
Yes. Please remind me that your penis makes you closer to God. It just really turns me on. Please.
Hey, they're the only one with an antenna. We all know that.
I mean, people think that this is like so out of left field, but I'm like, our dad, me and Lindsay's dad, is a Christian pastor who talked about sex a lot in sermons and said things like sex is a picture of, you know, God. And I like, this is just like patriarchal normative theology. And Josh just takes it to the next level, but it's the same thing. I guess that's where I get a little intense. I'm like, yes, we can always make fun of the Josh Butlers, but it's like, it's the majority of churches in the United States are preaching a version of that. And they don't understand when we rip it to shreds on TikTok. They're like, what? This is literally what we all believe.
This theology.
Yeah, you telling me you don't believe this? Well, I'm sorry, you're not going to heaven because belief is how we get there. Sorry, I just opened another can of worms. Just kidding. We don't have to go into that one.
I mean, I will say, thank goodness for TikTok. I think it's like saving us all. Danielle sends me such intense, funny ones, but also intense. There's some days I'm like, Danielle, I'm not in the mood for you to.
No, I'm on therapy talk right now. And so I'm just sending Lindsay so many like therapy TikToks. And
it's all about if your parents were like this. And I'm like, I know, Danielle, I know.
Lindsay's like avoidant mask on.
Connect with me and send those to me because I still have to work out all my mom shit. If she ever listens to this podcast, she won't listen to this podcast.
Meg's mom is the only mom that listens, and she's a big Lisa. Thank you.
Hi, Lisa.
She's Mimi. Hi, Mimi. Big fan.
Oh, Mimi. Okay.
Mimi.
I am excited for Mimi and Lois to start their boomers only post episode, like after chat kind of
like the wind down.
Yeah, it's the wind down, but for the boomer ladies.
Yeah.
After they listen to Holy Ghosting.
They get out their jug of Ernest Gallo wine, just a little roundy.
How dare you? How dare you?
Then you guys have to have like the kids version, like the Gen Z, Gen Alpha.
Yeah. Yes.
I mean, Lindsay's child, Margot, I just know you guys.
I know.
Like Margot's going to burn it down.
Yeah. My kid Margot's is like straight up an atheist. He's like, science is the only thing that makes sense. I don't know what you guys are talking about. Let's make believe shit. Are you alive in the world right now? Like, he's like, look around.
Guys,
shit is going crazy.
I realized that, like, that Margot, like, doesn't know what hell is. She's 8 years old and she doesn't know what hell is.
Love this
and
for
like,
her.
I really, really love this for her.
Wow.
She's a good mom.
My child in a myriad of ways. Yes.
I think you have to show her Carmen's revival in the land.
Yeah.
When she, you know, I think I've told you guys it's about this before, but she's having a hard time understanding that there are churches that don't like gay people. Like she's like, wait, what? That's a thing. Mm-hmm. And like, we're starting to get into it because conversations about her grandparents, she's now aware, unfortunately. Yeah. But what you guys were saying earlier reminded me of, I'm sure we've, when I was talking about TikTok, that person who is doing the worship covers, but making them be about their deconversion.
Mm-hmm.
Soraya and I have big plans. We've been trying. I recorded myself harmonizing to it because I love you, Lord, because I harmonized that song 1,000,000 times.
Yeah.
But it was like everything that they said in their version of it. I don't know if you've seen that. It's like the, I love my life and I celebrate how much I've grown since I walked away. And then it says, and you hear it to the tune of, mm-hmm. I love you, Lord. And then it's, I take up space and I choose my steps. All of me is beautiful and I deserve rest. I'm going to start crying.
Oh,
I cry every time I hear it.
Oh,
it's really, really beautiful. Wow. And I can't even remember their name. And so whoever is making that music out there on TikTok, it's at first when I saw it, I honestly couldn't, it made me like too sad. Like that was my, it's cause it just hits the nail on the fucking head.
Yeah.
But anyways, we'll link to that in the show notes. And if Sarai and I get our shit together, we will.
Oh my God. I hope you do sing because that is connected to our bodies. Like if you grew up like we did, we had to sing songs like that. Not just once a week, maybe twice a week. Like, think about how many hours your body has spent singing, swaying, and repeating this. Basically, it's a thought control experiment. Like, you're saying these words that you're supposed to believe. And if you don't believe it, then you better try really hard to believe it while you're singing it. And so, like, to me, I'm like, again, it's so prevalent in our upbringings, but I'm like, that's brainwashing, y'all. That is just brainwashing. Oh, and a lot of cultures do like music and all that. They are not doing it how we did it in the 80s and 90s and beyond.
Yeah.
Does that make sense what I'm saying? Like,
yep.
It's taking these cultural religious frameworks and then twisting them into this thought control. So we have to sing. We have to sing out different words. We have to get this out of our bodies. This is like my new kick. It's like, especially with the worship music. We got to get it out. And it sounds like you want to. Yeah.
Then I'll do it. Well, I used to. Okay. So here's a weird thing. I used to fall asleep at nights when I couldn't fall asleep. I would sing. There was a really repetitive worship song that I would just sing in my head over and over and over again until I fell asleep because it was just like, instead of like counting sheep or whatever, that was the thing. But I have racked my brain and I cannot remember what song it was. And so it, which is so weird to me because for years I did this and I'm like, again, is this another like, what is my brain doing to me? It was like blocking this. It was like the Asbury stuff. I was like, oh, right. There was a revival at my college and it was super weird. And I had blocked that from my memory. So I'm sure TikTok will tell me one of these days what that means about. I think I just like permanently disassociate.
Yeah, sounds like it.
Yeah.
Fun times. Like
there's some work to be done.
Doing it. I'm trying, y'all.
I don't know. Look, we're starting the journey. We're on the journey. We're not going to ever end this journey. I think that's we're all just here for it. And the fact that we can share this stuff and remember it. Like there's things that I shared here that y'all were like, mouths agaped like what, and it's important that we can recognize like these things were not normal and we did grow up in a way that we thought was beautiful and kind and loving and accepting, and that's just not what was happening. So it's okay, it's okay, because we now get to live that life and we get to be the ones who are loving and kind and accepting. And I love this idea that we get to make our own future and decide who we want to be and how we want to show up. And we get to just stop listening to all the bullshit. So I'm not there yet. None of us are there yet, but
we get to choose our steps and we get to take up space. Like,
I really want to go listen to that now. And I just want to say, like, can we all give ourselves a pat on the back, because we are in the middle of life healing from growing up this way and trying to parent our kids in a different way. And I just don't think people understand like the amount of work that takes to create a healthy space for our kids when we didn't have that ourselves growing up. And so I just want to take a moment and say, you know, we've had to overcome a lot. Like, and I don't know if it always gets validated, just being in the midst of boomer parents like that with kids who are really different, and us being in the middle, being like, oh shit, I have some healing to do. You know, I have some work to do if I don't want to perpetuate trauma. So good on us. It's a lot of work, but it's totally worth it.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, I think that's as good a place as any to
say goodbye.
To say goodbye.
I did my usual thing, which is I brought down the vibes, and I am
that was the wind down. It's perfect.
That was a patting us on the back. Yeah. That was a good vibe. It wasn't.
You know, what we learned is we all have a hard time saying thank you. And I'm going to receive that. So thank you, Danielle. I'm going to receive that. That is a really important thing to remember and to give myself grace, and to also applaud every other person who's working through their own shit and fear and trembling. And, but you know what? We get to do it Holy Ghosting style.
That's because we are Holy Ghosting. Meg says something about Patreon here.
Go become an eternal ghostie
at patreon.com/ Holy Ghosting.
Everyone, please go follow Danielle, especially on TikTok. You're my absolute favorite over there. I'm a lurker. I don't do a lot of commenting, mostly because I get triggered about things in the comment section often. But I will like and I will boost and I will repost all the time. So please go find Danielle at all the places. If you're a podcast listener, if you're a book reader, if you're a TikTok person, go find her at all those places. D.L. Mayfield.
Yep, I'm there. I'm there.
But you said goodbye to the guy.
Substack and TikTok are like where it's at these days for me. I'm loving it. And you guys have a great TikTok yourself.
Thanks, Lindsay.
Yeah.
Oh, we do. All Lindsay. I thought we have a fun TikTok. Answer, right, and Lindsay. Okay.
Yeah, we'll get there.
I make a cameo now and then when I'm with them and they
film. We direct post Sarai to tell her. Yeah.
They're like, can we throw a football at your face? And I'm like, yeah, totally.
And most of our TikTok ideas are from when I'm high. And I'm like, I have a notes app like dedicated to my high TikTok ideas for the podcast where I keep, and I'm just like, I remember just being like, audio adrenaline. No, I don't want football in heaven. That's
perfect. Yes.
That was that's it. The idea. Oh my gosh, I have a notes app for when I'm high and think that maybe I do believe in God, and I have a list of reasons why maybe God does exist that I think about when I'm high. And like one of them just says the Muppets. Like we live in a world where we have the Muppets. Like that points to some sort of intelligent design.
That's... Did you write down the Disneyland Monte Cristo? Because you texted me that might make
sense. Yeah, that's true. I wasn't high, but I was at Disneyland eating a Monte Cristo, and I was like, the sandwich is so good that God is real. Like, God is real.
Yeah.
As like, Pam Weasley. This is people giving God credit for shit God doesn't deserve credit for. Okay? No, take some damn credit for your own innovation.
On the in the Office classic episode, The Dundies, Pam is feeling God in that Chili's.
In that Chili's, yes. Yeah. Yes.
And I feel that way every time I go to any chain restaurant and or have a lot of fun. And
they have really large drinks. It does make you think about God. Yeah.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Give me the kind of margarita and a hilarious fishbowl, and I will unabashedly drink it. I will.
Okay, and thank God. And thank later. God for it, or goddess, or
Amen.
Whoever.
Hey, ma'am.
Hey, ma'am. All right.
Oh, Danielle, thank you so much. Honestly, so good. You're invited to the next retreat.
I overshared, but that's fine.
Oh, that's all I want in my life. Thank you.
Yeah, DL Mayfield killing the vibe since 1984.
Oh, that's cute.
Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.